Mark Twain is widely acknowledged as one of our nation's greatest authors. Many American students read Twain's books, including Tom Sawyer and The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, which was one of the first books to raise the issue of racial tension in America. Twain was born Samuel Langhorne Clemens, and he's the subject of a new TV documentary by Ken Burns. For Burns, the evolution of Samuel Clemens into Mark Twain tracks a series of adventures, from a small town in the Mississippi, to the Wild West, to Hawaii and Connecticut.
I am a border ruffian from the state of Missouri. I am a Connecticut Yankee by adoption. In me, you have Missouri morals, Connecticut culture. And this is the combination which makes the perfect man.
The words of Mark Twain, read by actor Kevin Conway. Ken Burns says his documentary is really two works, one about the person, Samuel Clemens, and the other about the celebrated author and humorist, Mark Twain.
There are lots of 19th century humorists, and we don't remember very many of them. And yet, Twain is still funny. It's because he understood that the source of laughter was not joy, but sorrow. And I think besides the overwhelming message of what a great writer Twain is, without peer, is the fact that Sam Clemens, at the same time Twain is the funniest man on earth, is having more tragedy happen to him than any human being could possibly bear. And one begins to understand Twain's zen-like humor and writing ability as a way to mitigate and reconcile and come to terms with the horrible stuff that was happening to the real human being, Sam Clemens.
Yes, he had one daughter who outlived him or was still alive when he died, and he was estranged from her more often than not.
That's right. This is a man who lost two of his siblings to childhood diseases. He lost a father very, very early. He lost a brother in a horrendous riverboat accident in which he took responsibility for. And then three of his four children and his soulmate, his beloved wife, Livy, and went bankrupt, all in the course of a life in which, at any given moment, he was expected to be outrageously funny, and was.
But he had to go out west to begin writing.
Yeah, he was in the Confederate militia for a while and skedaddled and headed west to Nevada and got involved with a bunch of reporters for whom the truth was not always the most important aspect of their articles, and learned his great craft of writing from this wonderful posse of writers.
But these travels, the travels out west and consorting with characters of various reputations, and on the river as a riverboat captain. That was his education.
That was his Harvard and Yale, our wonderful commentator Ham Hill says in our film. And I think the most important part of this education for him was that he was a keen observer of everything he saw. He was looking at all types of people, all characters, seeing through the veneer to the sort of essence, the human essence of not only what it meant to be an American, but universal themes, which is why Twain's writing travels so well.
But the self-education, I mean, he had such a command of the language. He was a brilliant writer.
I think it comes from church. I think it comes from slave stories, and it comes from singing hymns, and all of that sort of stuff conspired. And I think the important thing is that he is a great writer. Sometimes with humorists, we sort of stop there and we impose a little bit of barrier, in the same way the Oscar never goes to a comedy. So too, we sort of think we can contain Twain if we just see him as a funny guy. And my goodness, he is funny. I mean, he says it's not that the world is filled with fools, it's just that lightning isn't distributed right. That stuff will survive 1,000 years.
I was sorry to have my name mentioned as one of the great authors, because they have a sad habit of dying off. Chaucer is dead, so is Milton, so is Shakespeare, and I'm not feeling very well myself.
How did he become a Connecticut Yankee?
Well, it's very interesting that you have this rural southern boy becoming a genteel, upwardly striving haute bourgeoisie of Connecticut. He moved to Connecticut in the mid to late 19th century. Lots of writers were there. Entrepreneurs were there. It was a great place to be. He was now the most famous writer in America and the richest. And he was going to move his family to escape the specific gravity of this terrible, gnawing poverty of his childhood, even though he would go back to that idyllic place in his imagination. He called it the fountain of my great deep, and excavate and bring up all of the stories out of that circumstance.
Here's the conflict between Mark Twain and Sam Clemens. He sort of cast himself as a ne'er-do-well, a lot of self-effacing humor, and yet he was very ambitious and worked very hard.
He did indeed, and I think that to me is the crux of my interest. Here you have a guy writing a novel, co-writing a novel called The Gilded Age, indeed giving that era its title and excoriating the get-rich-quick mentality that is reminiscent of our 1990s. And then you have Sam Clemens living it. And so part of the great genius of Twain was being able to courageously take on great topics like race, like imperialism, like governmental arrogance, like religious hypocrisy, like discrimination of any kind, and making that medicine go down a little bit better, not just because of the great humor, but because it was so self-deprecating. He always knew that the human race was a parade of fools, but he'd point out quite distinctly that he was right there in the front leading that parade.
How did a slave owner's son become so bold about race and to write so eloquently about it?
This is the great mystery, and one only has to assume that his seeing it and feeling it, combined with this enormous gift to write, stirred his conscience in some unignorable way.
And to write about black people as fully developed human beings.
Well, this is his great gift. I mean, we've got Uncle Tom's Cabin, but we have in Jim, in Huck Finn, fully formed African-American characters for the first time in history, and he is putting them out as fully formed human beings. And that's a startling thing. And it's also startling given the undertow we experience today with periodic politically correct bannings of Huck Finn, which are, you know, misplaced, misguided in the face of a book which is perhaps one of the most revolutionary and insurrectionary books and great literature we've ever had. Ernest Hemingway said, all of American literature begins with Huck Finn.
On the lecture circuit, today we would call him a performance artist. He could perform his writing on the stage, this crusty curmudgeon with so many aphorisms.
He's so great. He said, I was born modest, but it didn't last. And, you know, he was wonderful. You know, of all the historical characters that I've tried to size up over the last 25 years, Twain is the only person that I think you could drop down into today, and within about 15 minutes, everybody would want him. He'd be on your show. He'd be on all the cable channels. He'd have a comment about this. And of course, at the end of the 19th century and early 20th century, that's exactly what he did. He was the media darling. So when reporters approached him and said, you know, that a Tammany Hall politician in New York had died, what was he going to do? Mark Twain said, well, I won't be able to attend the funeral, but I'll certainly write a letter saying I approved of it.
Ken Burns' new documentary, Mark Twain, may be seen tonight and tomorrow night on many public television stations. You can see the only known film of Twain on the website npr.org.